The LGBTQ plus community in the San Gabriel Valley is widespread but welcoming.
We are many people from many different walks of life, and this podcast seeks to share in those differences.
From Q Talk Radio and the San Gabriel Valley LGBTQ Center, welcome to Color Me Queer.
Hello, 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 everyone. Thank you so much for joining us on today's episode of Color Me Queer. Our guest this evening, afternoon, morning, whatever time you're listening to this episode, is our very own longtime LGBTQ plus advocacy devotee, Erin Sines. Erin currently works as an educator out in the LAUSD area, on track to become an administrator, and their gay job in the past 21 years has been really serving to make a home for the San Gabriel Valley LGBTQ plus center. I can talk a lot more about this as well, but just jumping quickly into the questions, Erin, with your 21 years of experience doing local advocacy, what do you think is still missing in the San Gabriel Valley?
Wow. So first of all, thank you so much, Camilla, for having me, and to everybody listening. I think it's the work that we're doing is fantastic, and everybody who gets involved makes it one more step closer to being a reality. But to answer your question, the thing that I think we need most is a physical center that's all of our own, that meets the needs of our community. I think that's the one piece of the puzzle that, you know, through this journey that we've been missing. And I think would really provide the leverage to accomplish our goals.
Thank you for sharing that. And I know it's something that we've talked about in our last 4 years working together. So I'm excited to move forward in that direction. And I feel like it's a beautiful moment for us to sit here, one president to another president, talking about this liberation work that we're doing for the LGBTQ community in San Gabriel Valley. Just curious, in your role as president, what is something that you learned being in the driver's seat?
So one of the things that I've learned is my biggest lesson in all of leadership, and I learned this from experience, but also from reading. And I read a really famous author, John C. Maxwell, and he does, his whole life is divided to leadership, but he said a quote. He's a little religiously for me, but you know, he says this in books. He says, like, if when I start talking about God and you don't like it, just skip a few pages and you'll be fine. So that's what I kind of do. But he said a quote that kind of resonated with my experience. And, you know, he asked a question of the reader, what is the one aspect of leadership that a leader has to have? And, you know, throws out communication, organization, personality, but the answer to the question is followers. You have to have people following you. If you don't have anybody following you, then who are you leading? What are you leading? And so that kind of resonated with me with, you know, my mistakes in leadership is I thought a leader is the one that had to do everything, right? Like the one that had to do, you know, be the face and be everywhere and do everything. And so later on, I learned that, like, no, you know, like you need people to do the work for you. And the leader is the visionary. The leader is the one that finds people who can do what they can't do and ask them to do it. And I think that was the biggest, you know, leadership lesson, I guess, to answer your question.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm actually a fan of John C. Maxwell's work. I read Great Leaders Ask Great Questions, and I thought it really helped me find a framework of understanding that sometimes I might not have the answer, but in a leadership space, I can at least be there to hopefully detail and rail the right questions. And so it's a beautiful thing to be here to talking about. So in thinking about the right questions and where we're at, you know, I'm curious about this, our background, you know, and the beginnings of the SGV LGBTQ plus center. Could you talk a little bit about the origin story?
Sure. So I'm going to touch a little bit about my personal history to answer that question. And then I'll go into the answer for your question. So, I grew up as a little gay boy in the San Gabriel Valley, but I didn't have the right definition for gay. I always thought that gay meant you wanted to be what we call transgender today. Because nobody talked about anything about that. It was not, common vocabulary. And so what people would ask me when I was a teenager growing up, you know, are you gay? And I would say, no, like, no, you know, like in my mind, I like my penis. I like, you know, I like these things and I don't want to get rid of them. And so that was my first confusion. And it wasn't until I went to college, that I learned, you know, like what gay really meant. And so I started getting involved in the gay organizations there on campus. And then when I moved back to California in 2000, I reached out to the LA LGBT Center, as it's known now. And, you know, I said, you know, hey, I'm a 20-something-year-old, you know, gay guy in Arcadia area. What can you connect me to on this side of town? And their answer was like, well, we don't even know where that is. You know, I'm like, I'm 20 miles away from you. Like, you can't, you know, guide me anything. And there was an active PFLAG group and there was a lot of stuff going on, but they couldn't even direct me. So that was the impetus for, starting the what was then the San Gabriel Valley Pride Festival. And the sad news about that was in 1999, there was an organization called Catalyst that had held their last Pasadena Pride Festival in 1999. And I had moved back in 2000. I had just missed it. And there was a little magazine called The Pink Sheet run by Rosalie Stevens. It was like, you know, like a newsletter, community newsletter for the LGBT community. And so I found it. I don't know how I found it because this is before the internet. And I saw a poster for the Pasadena Pride. So I called the number and the lady answered. And she's like, you know, we had to disband the organization. We weren't a 501c3 and all this stuff happened. And we, as board members, had to give our own money to pay back the vendors. And so we just disbanded. We gave up. And I pleaded with her. I talked to her about 3 or 4 times and pleaded with her, like, come on, please, we need to do something. You know, I'm only 20. I don't know what to do. So, with Teresa, let's see, I'm trying to think of her last name right now, but I can't, but Teresa and Christopher Ramirez and myself and a wonderful woman named Margot Strick came together and we created the San Gabriel Valley Pride Festival. So that was our first event in, 2001, in September, right before 9/11. So, that was fun because they were telling us not to get together. And, you know, we had been planning this event for a long time. So, you know, but that was the impetus. That was what started this whole thing is this LA Center telling us that, you know, there's nothing out here. And I knew there was a community. And so, you know, that was the little spark. And then in 2011, we were approached by, you know, a group of people who wanted to start the idea of the Pasadena Pride Center. And that's when we created that board and we brought in some, community organizers and leaders in the LGBT community. And we filed the paperwork because in my mind, you know, I had been leading the Pride Festival for a year and I had always dreamed to turn it into the center, but I didn't know how to do that. You know, I didn't have the tools. I didn't have the skills. You know, there's no book on how to start a center.
And you can say that again.
Yeah. And so, well, now there is, you know, but, you know, this is help, but yeah, so, that was the impetus for the Pasadena Pride Center. That was our first name back in 2011.
Yeah, thank you for sharing a bit about also the ever-evolving language as well, you know, talking a bit about, you know, your own instances of thinking about what LGBTQ plus identity looked like in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, and now being 20 years later, it's beautiful to hear a bit about the past, you know, and also the origin story for how the San Gabriel Valley LGBTQ plus Center came to be. And so in thinking about the place that we have played, I'm curious, in your opinion, what role has our center played in the past? And what do you envision our center to play in the future?
Sure. So in the past, we were the only center in the San Gabriel Valley that had actually done the paperwork to create the mission statement. And again, that was back in 2011. And it just meant a lot. And that was the comments that we got when we started that Google Voice number, 626-662-0058. You know, I'm sorry, 578-5772. Oh, I merged it. But, for those of you who don't know, that's 578-PCC, Pasadena Pride Center. So, you know, that's the original number that we had, but just to have a number to call was such a drastic improvement to what we had before. Just to have somebody say, you know, yeah, we'll give you the resource. We'll give you, connect you to that organization for your HIV test. We'll connect you to that organization for housing, issues. We'll connect you to this organization to give you some legal help. Even though we weren't providing the services directly, we were providing the connection to those services. So that was the biggest thing that we've been doing and continue to do. And then the second half of your question was, what do I see us going? I see us having multiple locations throughout the San Gabriel Valley, with one central hub, because our area is 200 square miles and, it's just a big elephant. And what's different about from us from LA is that we don't have the intensive transit system. You know, we only have like a couple major thoroughfares with the Gold Line, and then some bus lines, but travel on local transit is very difficult across the San Gabriel Valley. So I envision having little satellite sites all over. And that's modeled after one of my own experiences, again, back in New Mexico, where I went to college, is they had a group called the Empower Movement. And it was a HIV prevention program for gay and bi men. And what they did, funded by the University of San Francisco, is they purchased a house like in the middle of the neighborhood, and they made it into a center. And I thought that was amazing. It was very similar to our old location in Arcadia. It was just surrounded by residential areas. It was kind of like in the gay district. And they purchased the house, and we were able to do like a little coffee shop. And so that's kind of what I envision is, you know, some properties that are kind of near business districts, that the zoning wouldn't be that difficult, but, you know, you could do business stuff, there. So I think that's definitely a future I see.
Thank you for sharing that. And for also sharing a bit about your past with your undergraduate work as well. I think it's important to think about, where do we come from, you know, and why do we do this passion and this work? And so it's important to think about our origin stories and, you know, how we saw examples of it out into the world. So for you to share that coffee shop idea in some house, I think it's so powerful. And I've even heard from our own volunteers that there are further examples in a lot of the rural states where people just buy houses and they have these queer communities and sometimes even right across church. So there's, you know, even thinking about the proximity in certain areas such as ours. And so in thinking about that as well, I'm curious in your lifetime of work, do you have any milestone moments that you yourself remember in this work?
So I think the biggest milestone, it was the conduction of the first ever San Gabriel Valley LGBT community specific needs assessment. That was, you know, well, first of all, I wasn't even aware what a needs assessment was. Like that was like, what, you know? So, and so once I learned about it, we conducted the first one, and, just listening to what the people wanted was really amazing, because as I mentioned before, there is data out there about the LGBT community of the Los Angeles county. But if you look under the hood of where that data is coming from, it's mostly from the 90069 Hollywood area, which is a very different beast than the suburbanite, you know, the suburban queer. I think that's a term I made. So you can TM, you can use that, a suburban queer. because it's a very different community. It's, you know, we're you know, very close to our neighbors. We're, you know, don't, traditionally we don't travel more than 10 miles from our house to do all the stuff that we need, unless it's for work. And so, you know, we're very close knit, very connected to our community. And so we needed data specifically for our community. So I think that was the biggest milestone ever. The creation of that project with four listening projects throughout the San Gabriel Valley. So we did, we rented spaces throughout, like, Pasadena. We did one. We did one in Almani. We did one in Diamond Bar. And then we did one in West Covina. And so those, along with an online survey, was really amazing because you could read what people wanted and what they envisioned for what the center should do. And that was powerful.
Definitely. And to even think about when I came into the center, for the listeners and you all providing some context of your little host here, I came in November of 2017 and my very first volunteer meeting with Aaron, I was asked, are you available to be in a parade tomorrow? We're going to be in the Doodah Parade. And I was like, okay, we're doing this. And I was a part with some other amazing folks. And it was only five of us, and we were behind the queen, and we were doing, like, yes, say the queen, and having an amazing thing for Queen Imani. And so that would be one moment that I always treasure, is showing up to this meeting and being asked by Aaron, can you do this? And I was like, okay, I'm there.
And that just goes back to what I was saying earlier. We have a community. I've always told the board and people involved, I'm not worried about the money. I'm not worried about the people getting involved. We only have to ask. And I think that now that we're starting to ask, the reality is starting to become true. And I think that goes back to my leadership lesson that I learned, is that, you know, you can't lift everything by yourself. You have to ask the people to help.
Yes, and I definitely appreciate you for asking, tapping me in for help, and then as well, you know, bringing into reality where we're at today, also understanding your role and your own professional journey that you'd like to walk on. And so for context, Aaron is currently our first and only emeritus board member with our board of directors. And so they currently don't sit on our board of directors as a voting member, but they do sit in on our boarding meetings as more of an advisory role, and is actually still helping guide us through the strategic plan implementation process that we're currently walking. And this podcast is an example of that, making sure that we're getting our stories out and letting folks know a bit about how did we start and what is the SGV LGBTQ plus center. And it's powerful. It definitely is powerful. And with that, I do want to just go into the next one, because I want to answer this quick question as well, from the needs assessment. I was curious, what is something that it's taught you in the last 5 years of actually implementing some of this work into the community?
So the results from the needs assessment were basically four lessons that we learned, right? So the first one was that the community wanted a community. it was kind of duh stuff, but it was nice to see it reflected in numbers. And so, and black and white. And so, you know, that was the first need, is that we actually want an LGBT community, you know, center. We want to build our community. So that was number one. And then number two is we want locally provided and culturally competent programs and services. So, The chief complaint that we heard over and over again is, I'm tired of going to West Hollywood and LA to get the services that are culturally competent. Why can't I get them, as I mentioned, you know, within a 10-mile radius of where I live? That's, you know, we are in California. and so, like, that was, you know, we're not in a rural area. We should be able to get that competent care. And so, The third one was basically targeting to services that didn't exist, and that was particularly for three subgroups, which is the LGBT senior community, the transgender and gender nonconforming and non-binary subgroup, and the recent immigrants or first generation Americans. You know, those were the three groups that really have no services available or didn't. We do now. And that's the big thing that we've done over the last 5 years is we said, okay, look at, we can't really do anything about the third community right now. We don't have the capacity for language translation, and stuff like that. So we'll put that on hold, but we can do something for the LGBT seniors and the transgender and gender nonconforming, intersexed and non-binary group. And look where we are. You know, like we have expanded those programs. Our senior programs and transgender programs are one of our biggest programs that we offer with the most participants, but also the leadership, you know, growing from within. I think that is really amazing, you know, that we've been able to do that over the 5 years. So.
Yes, and thank you for talking a bit about leadership as well. I think what the SGV LGBTQ plus Center is really great at, in my own opinion, is seeing maybe the leaders that you can see within a group and how we can pivot their focus or a passion to help for the collective liberation of our community. Perfect examples would be our non-binary peer support group came from our TGI peer support group. And even some of our peer support groups that we're offering this month in April came within as well.
Yeah. And just to touch on that, I mean, that's kind of what happened with everything and kind of what we knew. Because if we were just to have, like, I'm just going to say, like, the purple shirted red hat club, we wouldn't get very many people because there was no network, right? There was no carrying the message. And I'll give you an example. So like, if you go to West Hollywood and you say gay, it goes gay, 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 right? It just like ripples like a radar system, right? That signal goes out because the signal is really strong. But if you go to like Arcadia and then say gay, the signal's going to drop off, right? Because there's nobody to pick up the signal and carry it on for you. So we had to build that community first. And in order to build the community, we had to widen our tent. We had to start with broad swaths of our subgroups, and then we could then separate off into a little bit. Or if we started with having individual groups for the red-hatted, purple shirt people, you would only be there in your room alone. Like, you wouldn't have anybody else to support you because you would be the only one. And so, you know, that's kind of why we did it that way, is we started broad and then branch out from there.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to the need for just, I'm actually going to use the term that you use pretty often, is planting the flag, is understanding that what we're here, I see, so for context, Aaron is nodding, and it definitely is a term that I've heard more than once in our meetings, because I think that our center in a way serves as a home for people, and like I'll even tell folks now, is that due with COVID-19 and with being an online model, in a way, it served for a home for people outside of the physical as well. And it's really provided a space for people to find comfort in community, in sharing folks, maybe if it's through an activity, maybe if it's through a peer support group setting, or even one of our author series, but really seeing that the need for just having our voice there and planting this flag. Did you want to expand any about where you first learned about this planting the flag?
Well, I didn't learn about it. I came up with it, but it was basically, it's just my way of explaining what happens in the San Gabriel Valley, and what the planting the flag symbology is imagine you're walking around the Arcadia Mall and you come across a table with a big rainbow flag on it, and you identify in the LGBT community, or better yet, an ice skating rink, in the Pasadena ice skating rink, and going there and seeing the flag as a bench, you know, like sitting on a bench, and being an 11-year-old kid coming up to somebody and saying, I know what that flag means, and I think it's really cool that it's here and I can see it. That's what planting the flag means. It's bringing pride to the people, and it's making pride visible. And I think that, you know, now we have so many flags that, you know, it kind of gets lost in the weeds a lot, because like sometimes people don't know what the flag is, you know, so that's why we use the rainbow flag traditionally, because it kind of is that universal symbol. And then, you know, like I said, we bring in the other flags, so people, you know, fly their flag together, they can kind of congregate. But we use the rainbow flag as a, you know, as a fly trap, you know, to attract people in, because that's what would happen at the Arcadia Mall and at the ice skating rink, is people come up to you and say, I know what that flag means and you're my people and how can I get connected to you? So that's what planting the flag means. It literally is putting your visibility out there and collecting people who are like-minded and then getting their email address and heading them up for money. I'm kidding.
And I think it actually speaks to the truth of a lot of the essence of our work. I think the essence of our work falls under education and awareness. And it just is in alignment with our strategic plan. It's in alignment with our mission statement of being able to provide an area free of discrimination for all folks, and whether LGBTQ plus or not, but truly understanding that at the essence of it, it's making sure that we just have a space by making it for ourselves, really owning that power within us. So I want to just ask this really cool question that we have on our roster is, can you tell us a story that has impacted you the most in this work in the last 10 years? Maybe an experience with somebody. You don't have to share names, but I'd love to hear about like just the story that always keeps in your mind when you're thinking about the center.
Yeah, so it's a common story. It doesn't really have one person attached to it, but basically the story goes something like this, you know, I went to a volunteer meeting and I was asked to help and I saw how much work needed to be done. And I reached out for my friends to help. And as I developed my own internal leadership skills and was given the autonomy to do and create things that were a passion to me and passion to other people in my community, I now am the committee chair, and now that I'm the committee chair, I'm being invited to board meetings and I'm being invited to present, and I think I might be a board member and I think that might be cool. And applying for the board members, you know, slot when the time would come around, you know, being interviewed, having to fill out the application, and now I'm a board member. And now I'm driving my vision at a strategic level because I can directly input. So that's the story that's kind of helped me keep alive and know that the center would survive, is because we're really empowering our own to do things that they like to do, and other people just clutch onto that and the ball just keeps going and going and going. You know, so that's happened, you know, at least two or three times throughout my tenure. And I think it's amazing because that's how, so again, back to John C. Maxwell, you know, you have to grow leadership. You have to, you know, develop those leaders around you. So then that way you're not the only one being the leader. You're empowering leaders to do, the mission of the organization.
When you were saying that story, I was like, did you bring your reading glasses today? Because I feel like you're definitely saying my story.
And it is your story, but it's also, you know, Denny's story. It's, yes. You know, a Christian story. You know, it's a lot of people, yes, who come. And again, the thing I keep telling everybody is, ask, you know, we have about 100 volunteers. Ask them to do stuff for you. Don't do it by yourself. You're responsible for getting it done. You're not responsible for doing it.
Thank you for sharing that. And for sharing the story today about the past 10 years, for talking a bit about the origins beyond that as well. We have two last questions for you today. The first one that I'm going to ask is, what is the first, if someone were to ask you today, how could I help? What is the first thing that you would advise folks?
So the first thing and easiest thing is lifting a finger and clicking on the website for the SGVLGBTQ.org and click that donate button. It's the easiest lift that you can ever do in your entire life, I promise you. And the benefits will be numerous. And because what we're really searching for is monthly donors, because with monthly donors, we can build sustainable future for the center. That during this time, we haven't been spending a lot of money on rent and our administrative costs. So we're hoping that when this is all over and we can, you know, find a place the sad, you know, fact of it is that a lot of businesses have closed, and that leaves a lot of real estate. So we have a very strategic opportunity to get a physical location, but we need the money to do so. And so if you want a physical center, go to the website, sgvlgbtq.org, click the monthly donate button, and, you know, give as much as you can, because that is really going to help us build the idea of the center.
Yes. And for any people who might be connected to a city council or a board or any other commissions, we highly encourage you to talk to your board about how maybe if you see an office building within your area that you think we could have rent for free, hit your girl up at president@sgvlgbtq.org, and we can definitely get connected. And then the last question that we have for you today, Erin, because we thank you so much for your time, is if you were to describe your aura today, what would it look like?
Oh my God, my aura. Well, I'll just do it right here. There's my aura. I don't know if you can see it, but it's like all that, my sleeves are the rainbow colors. So, you got it? You got it?
Yes, I'm seeing the rainbow
color. I know you're seeing it, but unfortunately the viewers or the listeners won't be able to see it. But basically, I have a shirt with like an armband that has the rainbow on it. That's I'm always 24 hours, 7 days a week. I'm rainbow. That's it. That, if everybody wants to get me a gift, they know to get it a rainbow, and Erin will be happy.
I love that. And thank you so much, Erin, for joining us on today's podcast of Color Me Queer. Thank you, listeners, for hearing episode 2 of Color Me Queer. We highly appreciate you subscribing to the podcast, donating if you become a monthly donor. And in advance as well, we encourage you to stay tuned for episode number 3. And I wish you a good evening, folks.